You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, this is Tim Rice, and this is Get Onto My Cloud, episode 24. I'm recording this podcast in October 2020, exactly 50 years after the studio album of Jesus Christ Superstar was released. That was the record that launched the careers of Andrew Lloyd Webber and me. So I thought this was a good moment to thank many of the people who contributed to his success, many of whom I'm still in touch with half a century on. At this point, I should mention that I have already thanked them personally at various stages in the past five decades, but further and continuing acknowledgement of their outstanding inputs to JCS cannot be overstated. In the course of these podcasts, which have now staggered to episode 24, I played several tracks sung by this wonderful original cast, notably Murray Head, Judas, Yvonne Elliman, Mary Magdalene, and Barry Denon, Pontius Pilate. But there were many others who made superb contributions to the record's success. A company of terrific contemporary rock vocalists, supported by one of rock music's most accomplished and respected bands, Joe Cocker's Grease Band. Here's one of the great rock vocalists, singing the role of Simon the Zealot, who attempts to turn Jesus' cause into a political revolution, Johnny Gustafson.
But add a touch of hate at Rome, you will rise to a greater
Johnny Gus, John Gustafson, belting out the first ever version of Simon Zelotes. The backing vocals on this track and others on the LP, Long Player for younger listeners, were a pretty hot bunch in their own right, including P.P. Arnold, Madeline Bell, Leslie Duncan, Sue and Sonny, and Kay Garner, plus the Trinidad Singers, a London-based choir led by Horace James. Johnny Gustafson was an original member of Liverpool's legendary Big Three beat group, and later in the Merseybeats, who had several chart hits in the mid-60s, including the top 10 entry, I Think of You. He subsequently played bass with a variety of heavy outfits, including Atomic Rooster, Quatermass, and a four-year stretch with Roxy Music. He also played with Ian Gillan's band. He came to us, recommended by the Grease Band. The Grease Band seemed to know everybody in the early 70s rock scene. Without them, I shudder to think where our less than hip contacts might have got us. They, in turn, had been suggested by Murray Head, who I'd met way back in 1966, when I was a management trainee, i.e. office boy, at EMI Records. I'd got to know Murray and his band, the Blue Monks, well in the following years, and when we got the green light from MCA Records to record one song from our insane new project, Jesus Christ Superstar, Murray and the Grease Band were the perfect fit. It was a success of that single, Superstar, almost everywhere but the UK, that persuaded MCA to commission the recording of the entire work on a double LP. Fortunately for us, the Grease Band were not required by Joe Cocker to hit the road with him in the first part of 1970, so they signed up for the full Monty with us. The Grease Band consisted of Bruce Rowland, drums and percussion, Alan Spenner, bass, and Henry McCulloch and Neil Hubbard, guitars, augmented, on our album, by non-greasers, Peter Robinson, piano and keyboards, and a former member of Murray Head's old band, the Blue Monks, Chris Mercer, on sax. Their performance was consistently scintillating, intense and exciting. Operating in a permanent haze of marijuana from dawn to dusk, their attitude to the project changed from friendly tolerance to genuine enthusiasm, with Bruce in particular taking a great interest in the overall master plan and making many invaluable arrangements suggestions. They'd probably never worked with two such determinedly straight producers before, and although we politely rejected all their offers to partake of their inexhaustible supply of dope, I was certainly fascinated by their tales of life on the road they'd played at Woodstock, and of the rock and roll lifestyle that we had never sampled firsthand. I'm sure the Grease Band could never really understand how we could be making such a hip record without any of the correct cultural, i.e. drug, qualifications. Maybe if we had turned on, the record would have sold 14 million in its first year rather than a mere 7. Sad to say, Bruce, Alan and Henry are no longer with us. Henry is perhaps best remembered for his stint in Paul McCartney's Wings, and he was also a member of Spooky Tooth. Bruce was drummer with Fairport Convention for a while. All three were top-flight session players, in constant recording demand once the Grease Band were no longer a viable combo. Neil Hubbard, still very active, has performed with a string of celebrated outfits, including Juicy Lucy, Bluesology, B.B. King, Kokomo and Roxy Music. J. Peter Robinson, keyboard wizard, led his own band Quatermass and has arranged, produced and written countless film scores and albums. Chris Mercer was also a member of Juicy Lucy, and we turned to him 6 years after Superstar to play on Evita on I'd Be Surprisingly Good For You, when his solo then matched his dynamic work on Damned For All Time on Jesus Christ Superstar. We were lucky to work with them when they were a tight, fighting unit, and their superb musicianship meant that Superstar, the original album, is a bona fide rock album. Nonetheless, it never makes any of the lists of the all-time best rock albums, not even the 500 best, or no doubt the 1,000 best. Am I bitter and twisted about this? You might say that, but I could not possibly comment. One key performer on the album not from the Murray Head stable was Mike Darbo. Mike's long been one of my closest friends, not least because he's a fine cricketer, perhaps like many of us slightly past his sporting peak, but still capable of flighting a ball with skill and guile. In 1970, he'd been signed by MCA as a solo artist, performer and songwriter, having recently left Manfred Mann, where he sang lead on many of their biggest hits, notably Mighty Quinn. So he was on the spot and on our label. We jumped at the chance to audition him for the one-off musical moment of King Herod, which we decided to make a song that was both sinister and comic. Or rather, Mike was auditioning us. Would he like the song? He did, and delivered a majestic performance.
Jesus, I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising from the dead. And now I understand you're God. At least that's what you've said. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine. That's all you need to, and I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews. Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made round here. You are all we talk about, the wonder of the year. Oh, what a pity if it's all a lie. Still, I'm sure that you can rock the cynics if you try. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool. If you do that for me, then I'll let you go free. Come on, King of the Jews. Ask any superstar, what is it that you have got that puts you where you are? I am waiting, yes, I'm a captive fan. I'm dying to be shown that you are not just any man. So if you are the Christ, yes, the great Jesus Christ, feed my household with this bread. You can do it on your head. Or has something gone wrong? Why do you take so long? Come on, King of the Jews. Hey, aren't you scared of me, Christ? Mr. Wonderful Christ. You're a joke, you're not the Lord. You're nothing but a fraud. Take him away, he's got nothing to say. Get out, you King of the... Get out! Get out, you King of the Jews! Get out, you King of the Jews! Get out of my life!
At the end of King Herod's song, Mike ad-libbed, "Get out of my life," which was a perfect conclusion to the vicious scene. A few months later, Mike's spur-of-the-moment phrase was singled out as the best line of the entire work by an American Christian reviewer. It was the very essence of the entire show. I was highly praised for pointing out that we are all determined to push Christ out of our lives. Only I hadn't. Mike Darbo had. The couplet that always got the big laugh was, of course, "Prove to me that you're no fool, walk across my swimming pool," and has even found its way into several books of 20th century quotations. I always regret not being able to come up with an equally good couplet for the final verse, since "feed my household with this bread, you can do it on your head" is rather an anticlimax, not to mention a weak reuse of a bread-head rhyme already used earlier in Jesus Christ Superstar. In stage productions, King Herod's song is sometimes the only scene that directors get wrong. It's very often played too camp and goes way over the top, so the sinister aspect of the number gets lost. Recently, in New York, there was a big new production of Superstar for television, starring John Legend as Jesus. Herod was played by Alice Cooper, and he, for my money, played the role perfectly, with humour, menace, and arrogance. Scantily clad girls and boys dancing around a debauched Herod doesn't really work, although I must admit, most audiences seem to be happy with total lack of subtlety. I've spoken before on Get Onto My Cloud about Yvonne Elliman and Barry Dennen, and of course, Murray. But the title role is, to put it mildly, crucial. At the beginning of 1970, with a project looking like a runner, sessions being booked, we still had no idea who was going to sing the role of Jesus. MCA had no one on their books who would fit the role. The year before, there'd been a completely ludicrous story without a scintilla of truth that John Lennon had been approached, was considering the offer but would like Yoko to play Mary Magdalene. Fortunately, the story went away again, but our lack of a Jesus didn't. However, the odd mention in the press that these two unknown guys were working on a musical about Jesus, the title role not yet cast, attracted a bit of attention. And Tony Edwards, a music entrepreneur who was just about to relaunch Deep Purple with a new lineup, including former Episode 6 singer Ian Gillan, got in touch. Tony came to see Andrew and me with tapes of one of his clients, whose voice was much closer to that of Andy Williams, rather than to the kind of wild vocal gymnastics we were after. Once Tony realized this was a rock score, rather than a Broadway one, he returned smartly, with a tape of Deep Purple's forthcoming Child in Time. We hadn't heard Ian Gillan's voice before, but it only took a few seconds for us to realize that he was right up our alley, just as Tony Edwards had very quickly realized, probably more than we did, that Superstar was a project with enormous potential. Ian thus got the part of Jesus and a royalty. He deserved every penny.
I only want to say, if there is a way, take this cup away from me, for I don't want to taste its poison, feel it burn me. I have changed, I'm not as sure as when we started. Then I was inspired, now I'm sad and tired. Listen, surely I've exceeded expectations. Tried for 3 years, seems like 30. Could you ask as much from any other man? But if I die, see the saga through and do the things you ask of me, let them hate me, hit me, hurt me, nail me to their tree. I'd wanna know, I'd wanna know, my God. I'd wanna know, I'd wanna know, my God. Wanna see, I'd wanna see, my God. Wanna see, I'd wanna see, my God. Why I should die? Would I be more noticed than I ever was before? Would the things I've said and done matter anymore? I'd have to know, I'd have to know, my Lord. Have to know, I'd have to know, my Lord. Have to see, I'd have to see, my Lord. Have to see, I'd have to see, my Lord. If I die, what will be my reward? If I die, what will be my reward? Have to know, my Lord. Have to know, my Lord. Show me now that I would not be killed in fame. Show me just a little of your omnipresent brain. Show me there's a reason for your wanting me to die. You're far too keen on where and how and not so hot on why. We'll be right back.
fire. Now I'm sad and tired. After all I've tried for 3 years, seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish what I started, what you started? I didn't start it. God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card. I will drink your cup of poison. Nail me to your cross and break me. Bleed me, beat me.
Ian Gillan with what remains for me the defining version of Gethsemane on record. He never performed it on stage, primarily because ever since recording it, he's been in huge continuous demand with various incarnations of Deep Purple and the Ian Gillan Band. Deep Purple broke really big with their album Deep Purple in Rock, the first to feature Ian as vocalist and Roger Glover as bassist, in the summer of 1970, just a few weeks before our Superstar album was released. So many people were vital elements in the recording and ultimate success of our 1970 album, including Brian Brolly and his team at MCA UK, and many of the staff at Olympic Studios in sunny Barnes. It was a pretty good summer. There were plenty of musicians and singers who did their stuff on one track or another, including such heavyweights as Chris Spedding, Mick Weaver, Carl Jenkins, Victor Brox, Brian Keith of Plastic Penny, and Paul Davis of Gracious. But one bloke deserves special mention. Our engineer-in-chief, Alan O'Duffy, a tall, then bearded, softly spoken Irishman whose commitment was total, beyond the call of duty. We were working with what then seemed state-of-the-art technology. We proudly and erroneously asserted on the sleeve that we'd used 16-track tape, although we actually used a 16-track recording machine. Tape itself does not have pre-assigned tracking. And Alan's mastery of every knob, plug, and fader was crucial. He also had considerable musical know-how and a fascination with the angle my version of the story was taking. We discussed words and music with him as much as we talked about the nitty-gritty of recording technicalities. The album did extraordinarily well around the world, notably in the United States, where it was the biggest-selling album of 1971, just edging out Carol King's Tapestry. Her album stuffed us in the Grammys, however. In many ways, despite many magnificent theatrical stagings of the work, the album still remains the definitive interpretation for me. It retains its driving energy, its melodic strength, and the power of the performance after half a century, and I dare say, totally immodestly, that people will still be listening to it long after we've gone. My grandchildren will anyway. As a counterpoint to that arrogance, I would like to finish with the capsule review by a chap named Robert Christgau, who is considered a doyen of rock reviewers. Despite having a name that includes that of our title character, Mr. Christgau, or maybe Christgau, was not impressed, and I'm glad that I did not notice this review at the time. Jesus Christ Superstar, Decca, 1970. Outsiders since Pat Boone have had the dumb idea that rock and roll means projecting the kind of sham intensity that the worst kind of opera lover is a sucker for. And here's more. Rock musical is too kind. Tommy, in which real rock and rollers pursued a grandiose dramatic concept, was risky enough, but set semi-classical, twice-removed melodies amid received, over-rehearsed rock instrumentation and all the verve and spontaneous power, which is the music's birthright, gets crucified. C minus. Thanks, Bob. That was Get On To My Cloud, episode 24. written and presented by me, Tim Rice, and produced by Peter Holtz.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUFS. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUFS celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUFS has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.